doing my thing. Yep. We're all in sync. Thank you.
Deham chatam na charama chitam utitam bha.
Deham chatam na charama chitam utitam bha.
Siddho vipassati yato jagamat sarupam.
Siddho vipassati yato jagamat sarupam.
Devad upetam ata deva visharipetam. Vaso yata parikritam madhiramadhandha.
Vaso yata parikritam madhiramadhandha.
Deha chatam na charamasitam utitam bha.
Deha chatam na charamasitam utitam bha.
Siddho vipassati yato jagamat svarupam. Devarupetta mata devarvasarapetam.
Devarupetta mata devarvasarapetam.
Vaso yata parikritam madhiramadhandha.
Vaso yata parikritam madhiramadhandha.
Deham chatam na charamasitam utitam bha.
Deham chatam na charamasitam utitam
bha. Vipassati yato jagamat svarupam.
Siddho vipassati yato jagamat svarupam.
Devad upettam ata devavasarupetam.
Devad upettam ata devavasarupetam.
Vaso yata parikitam madhira madhandha.
Vaso yata parikitam madhira madhandha.
Deham,
material body,
cha, and, tam, that, na, not, tadama, last, stitam, sitting, utitam, rising, va, or, siddha, the realized soul, vipassati, can conceive, yataha, because, ajigamat, he has achieved, swarupam, his real identity, daivat, according to destiny, upetam, arrived, ata, moreover, devavasat, according to destiny, apetam, departed, basaha, clothing, yata, as, parikritam, put on, mandira maranda. One who is blinded by intoxication. Translation. Canto 3, Chapter 8, Chapter 28, Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, text number 37. Because he has achieved his real identity, the perfectly realized soul has no conception of how the material body is moving or acting. Just as an intoxicated person cannot understand whether or not he has clothing on his body. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This stage of life is explained by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. A person whose mind is completely dovetailed with the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who engages 100% in the service of the Lord forgets his material bodily demands. So we've been reading, hearing, discussing the yogi's meditation upon the super soul within the heart, Vishnu. And these are Lord Kapila's instructions on devotional service. Previously, in the previous verse, has been described that one's mind ceasing from all material reactions, situated in their own glory as a spirit soul, transcendental to all material conceptions, so seeing things spiritually, they also realize the truth of the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and discovers the pleasure and pain as well as their interactions, which are he attributed to his own self, are actually due to false ego, which is a product of ignorance. So this section here is describing how the yogi, the spirit soul, the aspiring bhakta, revives the relationship with the personality of Godhead. And then in this verse here, it is giving further understanding of the particular point how one relates to one's own material body. Describing that that person is just like an intoxicated person. The concept of the material body tends to disappear, how it is moving and acting. Very important in many different ways, because in one sense, you know, it is evidence of someone who has actually become spiritually elevated. We have a situation in this world which has pretty much always existed, but of course in Kali Yuga these things become worse, in that everyone who may have a religious inclination or may want to pose themselves as religious or spiritual, probably a better way to put it. The actual religious inclination to be pious may not be there, God-fearing, but you know, a lot of people may like to pose themselves as spiritually inclined or religiously inclined. How do we tell? And of course, the governments, the authorities, they have to deal with entire populations and militant groups armed to the teeth with rocket launchers and machine guns, who in the name of their religious sentiment are doing all sorts of activities in this world. And yet, because the authorities in this world cannot distinguish between what is, you know, is there's this false understanding that everyone has a right to their own religious faith. The trouble is there any religious faith at all, or is that just a veneer for some very sinful demoniac intentions? So, what happens in Kali Yuga, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared in Kali Yuga. The Lord is called Chana Avatar, so hidden, covered. The Lord is sometimes called Tri Yuga. He appears in three yugas, manifest openly, and in Kali Yuga he comes in somewhat of a disguised, hidden way, covered. Because in Kali Yuga everyone takes everything cheaply. As Prabhupada would say, that In India, you would find God loitering on every corner. Everyone is God loitering on some corner doing some crazy nonsense. So a very cheap thing. Yes, here's God on this corner, there's God here. You look on the other, yes, there's another God over there. You go a block up there, yeah, there's another God up there. Like that. And, you know, down there, so many gods. Like that. So, the essence of everything, the science, the practicality, everything is missing. There's just an empty show in Kali Yuga. And yet the governments say, oh, yes, but that is their religious faith. Let them do that. We see in the times of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that there was, he was a magistrate, of course, and this is the proper role of authorities. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was at one stage he was a superintendent. I think at that stage he was a superintendent of the Jagannath Puri temple and a magistrate. So he had an official government responsibility to make sure that cheats and rascals were not causing trouble. So there was one Bishop of Shane, who was a very powerful yogi. He could make fire come from his eyes. What's that? He said he was Mahavishnu, and he had a couple of friends, Brahma and Shiva. And so, you know, this was tolerated to some degree until some of the wealthy and aristocratic wives were going, and he was bewildering their mind and then, you know, engaging in illicit sex with them. So this caused, you know, these sort of activities had to be stopped, of course. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went there and he, had a discussion with him and, you know, discussing about Jagannath, Lord Jagannath in the temple, and the yogi said, oh, I am God, you know, he's just wood. So then he understood he's a rascal. So, you know, he gradually exposed him and it ended up in that yogi's death. I think he took poison or something in jail or some.
He
shaved his head, and then because he'd been fasting, you know, trying to kill Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur by his mystic potencies, and he'd been fasting and, you know, summoning all this power to try and kill him and his family. When they cut off his hair, his yogic power was destroyed, and he sort of, after some time, he passed away. Yeah. So that's the proper position of people in authority. If someone is causing difficulty, because, you know, they should be stopped. Not that, oh, this is their religious faith and, you know, everyone has the right to practice. So it's like saying, yes, you know, this yogi, yeah, look, it's his religious faith, you know, let him, you know, cheat all these women and control their mind and, you know, hypnotize them, have sex with them and, you know, create children, you know. That's his faith. That's nonsense. And these days, it's even worse. Yes, they have machine guns and bombs and this and that and the other, knives, and, but that is their faith, let them, you know, do like that. no one can tell, and of course, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get actual information who a devotee can see just straight away. And just, you know, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he asks two or three questions to the yogi, merely, you're a fake. And the devotee, you know, because they understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, they can perceive within few minutes. They can speak to someone and understand, oh, this person is, has very little, if any, spiritual advancement. In fact, they're a rascal. So, how do they tell? because the Srimad Bhagavatam describes, of course, the symptoms of the different stages. So this is the beauty of going through the Srimad Bhagavatam like this, is you see that each stage of advancement has a particular symptom, characteristic. So the what happens these days is that people start from the top. When you become a religious person, you start from the top. That, I have had some realization, and now I'm in communion with God. You start from the very top. Which is, it's a very interesting concept. And somehow people, they feel that something has made me take up some religious course. So now I feel that I'm acting in complete harmony with the personality of Godhead. It describes here that... purport. Srila Prabhupada says, a person whose mind is completely dovetailed with the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who engages 100% in the service of the Lord forgets his material bodily demands. So this is the question. Is someone dovetailed with the personality of Godhead? Is that their advanced position? Generally not. I mean, we know, even, in ISKCON, where devotees practice Krishna consciousness daily, very sincerely, over many, many years, and we understand that, being dovetailed at every moment with the personality of Godhead is not a cheap thing, even for devotees. They've dedicated their lives properly to that and trying to give up, other motivations and like that. We see that a person is claiming that I'm dovetailed. I understand what God is thinking and what he wants me to do. Which is quite a statement for someone who can't even control their own mind. If one doesn't even understand oneself. Someone is, quite often actually people take to spirituality or religions when they actually feel lost, completely lost. Quite often they get rock bottom. I'm just so lost, and then they'll do something, they'll walk out in the desert for 40 days, or they, take some drugs, or, start cramming in, the Quran or the Bible. From that point of being completely lost, a couple of days later, I'm completely, spiritually elevated. But actually, they're actually still lost. They have very little understanding of their mind, the body. They claim to be, their relationships with other living entities are very dysfunctional. So they're claiming, I have this intimate relationship, I understand relationships so well and personality so well, I can understand the personality of Godhead who's qualities are as deep as the ocean. He thinks in terms of his intelligence is unlimited. He knows all things because he is in all places at all times. He knows everything, past, present, future. He knows everyone. And because I'm sort of on that level, we're just, on an equal level, me and God, like this, cheese and chalk. The reality is, generally, people, they have very difficult ability to, they can't function in their own family. People have difficulty with their husbands, they have difficulty with their wives. People have difficulty with their best friends. They go to an educational system and they have difficulty. In the workplace, so many difficulties. So many dysfunctional relationships. And yet, the personality of Godhead, they feel, I have this expertise, I'm way up on this level of love and intelligence and dealing. Like that. So,
And of course, also here describing that in the previous verse, it describes that one is situated in one's own glory. One understands that one is a spirit soul. There's no possibility of understanding the super soul if one cannot understand. One cannot distinguish between one's own self as a spirit soul and the material body. How can one understand the personality of Godhead? That is the first requirement to understanding the personality of Godhead, is to at least understand ahambrahmasmi, that I am of that same spiritual quality. I'm not this body. I'm an eternal spirit soul. If one has full faith in that, and therefore endeavours not to act according to the demands of the body and the mind, that is one symptom that a person is having transcendental knowledge which, that destroys all one's doubts, that gives one very strong faith that one is a spirit soul. Such a person can then begin to understand the personality of Godhead. Understanding. He is of the same spiritual nature, eternal. One who understands, one of the first things, symptoms of someone who understands that they're not this material body, is that, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, they have a vision of eternity. You know, when one comes to understand. So, a spirit soul thinks in terms of eternity. Someone in connection with the material body thinks in terms of what is relative to this body in this lifetime. You know, there's that story of the yogi. There's a yogi, a very hairy yogi, meditating. And he was there in all sorts of extreme conditions. Someone described that, asked that he should build some sort of shelter. He was just out in the open. I think he, you know, every millennium or something, thousands and thousands of years or so, I can't remember the exact. It's quite, you know, one hair would fall from his body.
Yeah. Luma. Luma.
Yeah. Luma. Yeah. So how, every so many, you know, some long epoch of time, one hair would fall, and he would live until, you know, the duration of all those hairs falling. So he was there for millions and millions of years or something. So he said, you know, there's no need to build a shelter because I'm not here for very long. You know, if you see the endeavor that people go to build a home, you know, to the point where it takes almost a lifetime these days, for most families, it takes almost a lifetime to build that home. What's left of your lifetime, you're paying it off, working hard even in old age. It's not quite the vision of eternity, is it? If someone is thinking, you know, I eternally want to serve the personality of Godhead, live close to a temple and worship the Lord, let me get a nice place close to the... That's a different concept. But for the sake of setting up a home in the material world, that's it. And an extended version of that is nationality. I want to establish this country. You know, we have to correct this political situation. We have to fight this war. We have to do so many different things. You know,
These civilizations, they come and go. Roman Empire's gone, Egyptian Empire's gone, Vedic civilization is gone. You know, all the civilizations, you know, but sometimes they last for thousands of years and then just gone. Everything we know of now, in a couple of thousand years, all change. The way things go these days, in 100 years, 50 years, 10 years, God forbid, everything different. Everything collapsed. You know, the Vedic astrologers, some of the elders from past generations in the different books, they describe the next war, which we're probably already in it, that, you know, it'll be the end of Christianity, Muslim religion, you know, a lot of the mainstream religions, you know, they'll just cease to exist as we know it. There have been a lot of, you know, religious organisations that have, you know, come and gone, and they will also be just like that. They will last for a certain amount of time and just finish. So one who has a vision of eternity, as a spirit soul, they're thinking in those terms. My eternal life, of which this material body, this entire lifetime, is just a moment. It's like you know, like being, you're in the spiritual world, you blink, they blink, you blink, that's your whole existence in the material world, billions and billions of years, and you blink, eye shut, and you open up, you're there with Krishna again, and that is the entire duration of billions and billions of years in the material world. It's just a, you know, you can't have a part of a moment in the spiritual world. It's nothing. Very fleeting moment. So that, you know, this vision. Now the super soul, of course, never ever comes down to that limited material conception. Always on the spiritual platform of eternity, but all knowing on that platform. Even when we, you know, come to our spiritual life, we're still not all knowing. The super soul is all knowing. So if one is in association, if one feels that one is, you know, picking up a certain intelligence, beginning with I'm not this body, beginning with that vision of eternity from the super soul, it would manifest in, you know, how one lives one's life and one's attention to the body, you know, and things like, you know, politics and nationality and, you know, constructing homes for the sake of home and families and everything like that is really, has no interest at all. You know, just like as you walk down the street, you pass by different specks of dust and different, you know, twigs and things. You know, you walk past an ant colony. You know, does anyone ever stop? Oh, you know, and you know, look at the social interactions, get involved. You know, pick a friend. Oh, I like this ant. I'm gonna make friends with this ant. You know, like that. And I'm going to help them build their little home. You know, you don't get involved. It just means nothing. You just walk past. And our entire civilization, from someone, you know, with a, you know, even from the demigods, what to speak of sadhus on the transcendental platform, it just, you know, just fleeting moments. You know, some of these personalities, you know, who, like Narada Muni and personalities like that, who exist for the duration of Brahma's life, in one sense, you can imagine just seeing the civilizations just come and go. They're, you know, so they take interest, just as we take interest in the ant colonies. We try not to, you know, crush them and, you know, poke sticks down there or, you know, cause too much trouble. We make sure that ants have a home somewhere. We try not to. But otherwise, it's, you know, so the demigods also, they make sure everything's going on, but they don't try to send too many tidal waves. So, you know, you'd expect that that person in the association with the super soul is manifesting that And that tends to manifest the way one deals with one's body, one's family. Now, of course, in devotional service, although we are detached from this life, understanding it's just a moment, it doesn't mean that we don't pay full attention to our family, to our body, to our homes, to our cars, to our possessions, because all of them are paraphernalia we're using, not paraphernalia, I don't call our family paraphernalia. We've got some lovely paraphernalia at home. We've got a wife and a couple of kids. Yeah. They're assistants. And we cooperate on the path of devotional service. But so devotees are not neglectful. In the same way that when we're dealing with the deities, when we're dealing with devotees, we're dealing with, you know, if we're doing paraphernalia for the deities, very, very careful. A devotee will actually treat, you know, the different, their home, you know, their shoes, everything, that this is being used in Krishna's service. I mean, one time, but not with attachment. But because it's utilized in the service of Krishna, it is very dear to the devotees for a transcendental reason, not for a material reason, not due to the bodily, you know, attachment. And one time in Sydney, I was doing Sankirtan, we drove from Sydney and we drove our way out into the country to do Sankirtan. And when we got back to the temple, Ramai Swami, he was a brahmachari at that stage, he was, I think we were in, this is the temple before they got the King's Cross. And he said, "We just go today." And we told him, you know. He said, "Really?" He said, "You drove all the way." This is like we went practically covered the other side of New South Wales. You know, "You drove all the way there and all the way back today." And it's, yeah. He said, "You must have been going pretty fast." And then he analysed how fast we're driving. He said, "This car is, you know, Krishna's property. You know, you have thrashed it," which brahmacharis tend to do. They thrash cars. In the old days, not now. But never happens now. But so he said, "I want you to go outside and pay your obeisances to the car." Which we did. We went out, he came and watched. We all paid our obeisances. "I'm sorry. You're so sorry, car. We have thrashed you. You are, you know, the transcendental paraphernalia of the Lord." So, you know, that detachment for utilizing things for one's own body or mind, that is absent. That is one of the symptoms. But for a devotee, that attachment is there because the devotees, they're serving Krishna nicely. We have a loving relationship with them. Prabhupada says association with devotees is tantamount to associating with Krishna. If you have the association with devotees, it means Krishna is there. And so very dear. And the paraphernalia is also, we take great care because that is a sign of our love for Krishna. So, but that detachment is there, and the consciousness of associating not only on, as one, as a spirit soul, but associating with the personality of Godhead must manifest. It's like if you go to, you know, if you go to a comedy show. So there's one person there; he will carry the whole audience, and he will make them laugh from start to finish. You know, if he's a good comedian, he knows it. Now they'll all be laughing for 2 hours. They'll come out very happy like that. So, you know, they are associating with a person and you pick up that person's mood, some of their, you know, concepts like that. How is it possible to associate with the personality of Godhead and not manifest some of that mood? Just like the other day, someone said, "Oh, you're very kind." I thought to myself, well, you know, it's not my credit as a devotee of Krishna. Krishna is very kind, If you're associated with Krishna and serving Krishna, representing him, you'd expect devotees also to become very kind. Isn't it? You know, that you pick up that sort of... just like children, they're playing someone's birthday. One little kid wants to eat the whole cake, take all the toys, take and hide them. They don't want to share them. But the parents are very sharing. So everyone, all the kids pick up on that mood, like that. If you're in the association with the personality of Godhead, you pick up on that mood. Everything on this planet belongs to the Supreme Lord, and it is meant for the benefit of every other living entity. You pick up on that mood. I'm certainly not going to go racing down the street looking for someone to kill to, you know, take something for my own pleasure and then say that that's because I'm associated with God. It just doesn't make sense. You know, it's just an obvious disparity in one's consciousness for someone who's, you know, there has to be some symptom. Everything belongs to the personality of Godhead. He is all good. He is the Supreme Father, loving Father. He is the supremely intelligent, the Buddha. If one is taking his mood in his association, these things will all manifest in one's activities and one's personality. And if they're not, then it means that that person really is not has no real understanding. There's no concept of the personality of Godhead. That association, that communion is cut off sometimes as far as possibly can be. So, and that elevation, as we said, that understanding of the personality of Godhead, that's a topmost elevation. But generally when people start spirituality or religion, they begin from that point. That's where I am. Yesterday, you know, I was having so much trouble, you know, I was, you know, at rock bottom, and then I read this book, I bumped into this person, and then it dawned on me that, you know, I have this spirit, I'm on a spiritual journey from now on, and, you know, I'm living in harmony with God from this point on. And from that point, they understand that everything they do, they have no ability to distinguish between their mind and senses and the personality of God within the heart. In fact, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, those in Tamaguna actually take the wrong thing to be the right thing. Actually, someone in Rajaguna, they have difficulty distinguishing things. But in Tamaguna, they actually take the exact wrong thing to be the right thing. And then they stand firm on that. And that's what goes on in the name of religiosity. And so here, of course, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila, he will mention that these yogis, at this point, when they realize the personality of Godhead, the super soul within their heart, they come to the very, very start platform of bhakti. On that platform of transcendental realization, which is not even touched upon by the multitudes of spiritual and religious personalities in this world, not even touched upon. They're going in the opposite direction. That's the beginning point of bhakti yoga. Because from that point, one then has to learn, how do I reciprocate a relationship with the personality of Godhead? How do I do that? You know, you have marriage counselors, you have this thing, you have tribunals and mediations. People fail in, you know, on just the basic level. People can't even look after their own children. People can't even look after themselves. In Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel, everyone is quarreling with everyone. And Ramai Swami says that, you know, if you put someone in a room by themselves and there's no one to quarrel, they'll argue with themselves. The mind. You know, and then back and forward. So, At that point, one is recommended by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam to take association to learn the art of bhakti or reciprocating with the personality of Godhead from a devotee. Someone who is very expert and already has an established relationship with the personality of Godhead. So of course, for most people, and especially in different religious organizations, that's the worst thing you could say. Oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, someone from Christianity, Muslim religion, you know, you're having trouble, you know, understanding what is religion, pop down to the Hare Krishna temple, have a little prasad, and they'll, you know, say, oh yeah, sure. They're not going to do it. That's the last thing. They're the last people. They're the very last people on this earth that many people who are interested in religion and spirituality will talk to, is to come and have a chat with the Hare Krishna, have a little bit of prasadam. And yet, how is it possible, when one is nowhere even near, you know, the platform of, you know, spiritual quality, spiritual realization, and then they're foolishly, crazily thinking they have some intimate relationship with the Lord, they need to speak to a teacher. And it seems, to them, it's the most illogical thing that you could do, yet it's very logical. Just like when people go to primary school, they spend 6 years in primary school. What's this one up to? Where's he? Prep. You're in prep? He's starting soon. He's doing homeschool, but prep. Very good. So another 5 or 6 years, and then secondary. Yeah. Now at the end of primary school, homeschooling, if you make it through, well done. It's not an easy job, but it gives them good association. Then you'll say, now you will not go to any other teacher. I have taught you. You will not go to anyone besides me. No, you will say, from what I have given you, you are now ready for another teacher. And they may take up secondary education, gradually tertiary. You know, it's a natural thing that when one finishes one course of, you know, education, and they're then to take advantage of everything not as if, you know, at the end of primary school, someone says, now forget everything we taught you. Waste of time. Go and learn something else at another school. No, it's everything you've learned is preparation for your next teacher. And then they go through secondary school and they get to the end of that. Everything you've learned is preparation for your next teacher. Like that. On the spiritual path, they have this concept. You bump into a teacher haphazardly. You don't know why you accept them as your teacher, and you don't go past that person. In this lifetime, there's only one teacher. No, you know, it's illogical. It doesn't happen. The scriptures don't recommend that. The scriptures recommend you may have a Diksha Guru, but you have many Shiksha Gurus who progressively, according to their capability, take you from one step to the other. And when you get to the point, as the yogis get to, they realize the personality of Godhead within the heart, they realize, you know, that they're a spirit soul, and they want to engage in an active, reciprocal, loving exchange, they must go to a devotee and learn that science. It's not such a cheap thing to associate with the personality of Godhead. Just like, you know, we practice here, you know, with the deities. It's not a cheap thing. You know, we don't allow anyone to just wander into the deity room because, you know, within 2 seconds they forget that they're dealing with the personality of Godhead. Although, you know, he is standing there. So one of the best ways that, of course, you know, as Prabhupada showed us, if you want to engage in the, learn the science, and as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, it entails 2 things. You approach the spiritual master, both, you know, the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru, and you inquire from them, but you also actively do some service. You take up some active service. It is not Krishna's mood in the Bhagavad Gita that we're idle and you just give us some knowledge and then we sit there and meditate upon that. Arjuna said to Krishna in the third chapter, I think it was, or the fifth chapter, he said, you've explained Buddha Yoga, this communion with the Lord, taking knowledge from the Lord, associating with Him. Now you're telling me again to, fight this war. It's like you're giving me two different instructions. And Krishna's saying, there are two processes. You can be, remain inactive in one sense and meditate upon the Lord, but it's better to be actively engaged in the devotional service. And this process is not only helpful, just like, when you're in the educational system, you learn things and then you practice something. If you do cooking courses, you can guarantee that they'll show you different things and then you're going to practice it. Otherwise, if you do an entire cooking course and you never even enter a kitchen, what is it? It's very difficult for that. So the other thing is, in the spiritual world, we're actually active as a spirit soul. Prabhupada mentions in the Gita, don't think that because you're in a material body, that's why you're active, because the body is active being. The body is active because you're a spirit soul. It's not because you're in a material body that you're active, and when you get out of the material, when the material body ceases, you'll be inactive. You're active in this world, the body is active because you're a spirit soul and you're active. You have so many, desires and thoughts and, creativity and characteristic personality and unlimited energy, practically. The spirit soul is described to be, more effulgent, more powerful than thousands of suns. That energy, can be utilized. So by engaging in devotional service and hearing the knowledge, one is practicing and then the realizations come. That practice is sankirtan. When devotees engage in sankirtan, the best part of sankirtan, of course, is preaching or somehow helping other spirit souls, somehow or another, to have that mood. It doesn't matter whether you're in management, whether you're in the kitchen, whether you're cleaning, what have you, but the sankirtan mood should be there. And then it's absolute. I'm doing this management, I'm doing this cleaning, I'm worshipping the deities, I'm cooking, because this entire movement is dedicated to take the spirit souls and take them out of this miserable bodily conception of life. So when you absorbed in sankirtan, it is that activity intensifies the whole experience to this point here was described, that just as an intoxicated person cannot understand whether or not he has clothing on his body. So, in devotional service, so that's quite a statement. If you think, I want to be on that platform, I'm so absorbed in this wonderful relationship with Krishna, completely off the bodily platform, I don't even notice I've got the body. Wouldn't that be blissful? Sometimes you have the mind's giving you, off the mental platform. Prabhupada would say, when someone gets on the mental platform and become a rosh, he'd say, go in the closet. Off the mental platform, off the bodily platform. And that actually, when one enters into that sankirtan mood, you see, especially that was very strong in, Prabhupada's days, that they picked up that mood from Prabhupada very, very quickly, very powerfully. And, when they established the Bombay Temple and the Vrindavan Temple and Mayapur and different temples around the world, they had the living conditions were, as harsh, as difficult, as painful, as stressful as you could possibly imagine, and yet they were in this bliss. I remember seeing the videos of the devotees going out on Harinam with Prabhupada when he went back to India, and people were pouring out on the streets, and they were saying, we all had dysentery, none of us could eat, we were in so much pain, we were just safe. But that bliss of being out on the street with Prabhupada preaching all over India, they just transcended the whole thing and just didn't even notice it. Very, very extreme. I've got two little stories I'll tell just to finish up. Couple of moments in my disastrous spiritual life where I may have had a few glimpses of transcendental nectar just to keep me going despite all my failures. One time I was with Annie Ruda and Pushpanjali, a couple of brahmacharis, and we travelled to Tasmania doing Sankirtan. So we're all sort of in the brahmachari. I was brahmachari ashram, a brahmachari mood. I think Annie Ruda may have been with his partner, but I don't think they were living together. She was sort of like a brahmachari. It was sort of, in those days, a couple was a couple, but they were sort of more like a brahmachari and a brahmachari. Anyway, so I got really sick. I used to get very sick. Probably because of my misspent teenage years. I had this extreme pain in the glands, my, the nose, and that, migraine, headache, lost all the strength, fever. And it went for a couple of days, and I was still going out on Sankirtan each day and still, getting up, chanting my rounds. That was extremely painful and very, very difficult. I probably should have been hospitalised, but in those days, as a devotee, there's no question of going to a doctor, let alone a hospital. Doctor, you should have taken an hour or two off Sankirtan. Hospital, the amount of time to take off Sankirtan, that wasn't allowed. So anyway, I went to sleep. When I went to sleep, I dreamt that my spiritual master appeared before me, and I said, oh. And he appeared in that room where I was. We were in a little cabin. And I said, did you just fly in? Like, thinking of it. And he said, yeah, I just flew in. But he had a smile. And then I thought, oh, he probably did fly in. And he just floated in. And he looked at me. He had a very kind look. He could see that I was sick. And I was saying, I'm very ill. He had this little jar and he lifted off a lid. And he said, this Maha sweets. Have this. And so I reached in, I took one, took the Maha sweet, and I thought, oh, so blissful. Immediately. And I went to get another one, and he put his hand on my hand and said, that's it. That's all you need. And then he left. And when I woke up, although I was still ill, I had no sensation of my physical body at all. I could feel the swelling and everything like that. I could understand every symptom of being just as it was there. I had no sense. I was like floating blissfully, completely detached from the body. No sensation at all. I was laughing. And I felt, what was that Maha? What was that Maha Prasad that he gave me? So it was, an example there. There's a few times, but these ones stand out. There was another time where, I think I've mentioned this Sankirtan story, was with Jai Sheela, who was the regional secretary for New Zealand for a while. He was a Prabhupada disciple. We had a marathon, and we were very, very competitive in those days, lovingly, in the mood that I want to be the first to touch Krishna's lotus feet, like the cowherd boys. Let me touch his lotus feet first. So, as loving, not. So, because it inspired each other to, serve more and do your best. So we were going hotel to hotel, some very rough hotels. It was a marathon, and we were going from morning till night. And change your rounds, have something to eat, that was about it. And again, I got really ill. And this time I was going in and out of consciousness in the car. And Jai Sheela was saying to me, you should go back to the temple. Probably should have said you should go to the hospital, but that still wasn't going to go that far. Let's just go back to the temple. So I was thinking, yeah, you just, we're neck and neck in this marathon and we're winning. So basically out of the two of us, whoever wins will win the marathon.
And I'm thinking, you're trying to get me to go back to the temple so you'll get an extra day in. And I'm thinking, I'm not going. So we went on like this for a couple of days, and then on the last day, I was more ill. Each day I got worse, and of course, because I should have gone to the hospital, I was just getting worse and worse. And we had saved this last factory. There was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people there, and they'd all just got their Christmas money. And we had, big, car filled with candles we were going to sell them. So we got there, and we pulled up outside, and he just raced in. So we'd saved it. It was the last place we were going to do, and it was, just... So I sat there in the car, and I prayed to Krishna, the supervisor. I said, I can't speak. At this stage, I actually couldn't speak. My throat was so raw. Someone said to me, how are you feeling? Going, I was so sick, I couldn't speak. And I could hardly walk. I was dizzy. And I didn't know how. And I prayed to Krishna. I said, Krishna, this is the last one. Please help me to do my service, because I can't do anything. I can't speak, I can't walk. And then I offered a prayer, and I got out of the car, and I walked inside. And when I walked inside, I put my box of candles on a table next to some people, and someone turned around to me and said, oh, they're those, candles. What are they, about 20 bucks? I nodded. I'll have one. Oh, next guy. Oh, yeah, I'll get one of them. They're all thinking I'll take a little something home for Christmas. I cleaned up. I never said a word. I went back to the car, back and forth. I spent hours in there. We sold everything. I didn't speak at all. And I won the marathon. Not very important. But what was really important was how Krishna, you can perceive, Krishna was there. And whatever was happening on the bodily platform, I was in ecstasy. Because I understood. It's almost like Krishna's taking the candles out and he's in the heart, you take this one like that. You're in so much ecstasy that, the bodily concept of life just disappears. Not just sitting, So that is how we do it as devotees. We actually preach Krishna consciousness, and you will, even... as described by Rupa Goswami, even for a neophyte, like myself, worse than a neophyte, the process is so potent, you will experience, transcendental bhava. Sometimes, you get these little glimpses by the grace of the Lord. Well, so I'll just leave it there anyway. If anyone has any questions or comments, we'll probably... I won the marathon.
And what I have discovered when I was studying, that all the relationship, there was no relationship at all between a student and a teacher. They just come and they just wear water and they just say whatever they're supposed to say in the class. And all they are focused in is when the class is going to get over, I'll be out of here. And there is no sign of any genuine care or any love for anybody, because to have a relationship you have got to have some love and some reciprocation. But these teachers, they are like machines, and they are like not ordinary machines, they are like very complicated machines, which you can't really can't understand what is going in there.
Yeah.
And in their own life they are also having so many problems which they also sort of
Yes.
So I got like an experience a few times. I can still remember some of the teachers. They were themselves like in mind. They were like in their own little tiny room, sitting and just whenever the class finished, they go and sit in their tiny room and just maybe have some chat with each other. And
Yeah.
Because teachers don't really explain.
Yeah, and that's right. And what happens there is because of that, because many of the teachers we are exposed to in this world are people that you feel, gee, I'm not really going to, I don't want to be anything like you. You know, give me the lesson, but I don't want to be like you and I don't want to pick up your mood. When people join Krishna consciousness, sometimes they behave to the devotees in the same way, you see. And I've seen that more and more in ISKCON, where people who come to Krishna consciousness, they carry that distaste of having a teacher, someone above them, in their relationships with senior devotees. So, and they even carry it over to the super soul. Oh, look, I'll take some lessons with the super soul, but I don't want anything to do with him. He's the one who made this war over here. He's the one who did this. He's the one who flooded this country. You know, so we understanding properly the personality of Godhead, the nature of devotees, we should. And be aware of the fact that when many people, because we're saying, you know, Lord Kapila is saying people should approach a devotee, therefore devotees have to be have very nice qualities. Because people will come to, you know, anyone who immediately has some sense of, I can teach you something, they're like, they immediately don't like that person. You will not be above me. Everyone that's been above me has caused me so much trouble. You are not above me. You will not control me like that. So devotees we have to be very, very careful. People need the science of bhakti. And we have to approach them very, very humbly. Therefore, Trinada Pisan, Chanata Lord, Visan Krishna, Mamani, Mamanadina, Kirtani Asada Hari. To preach, if a devotee is not very tolerant and very, very humble, they will not preach very well and not for very long.
Another thing is like what to speak about the teachers. What about our own parents? They're also like supposed to be our best teachers in one sense.
They're generally not. That's right.
To push him down, not yeah. Give him actually any opportunity to open.
So again, as a devotee, we have to be such a good son or a good daughter to our parents that without them knowing, we can help them to teach us. Not that we reject them. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that we should be respectful to the parents. It's one of the principles of the austerities of the body. Part of that. We should be respectful generally to parents, even though they may have some faults. And we should try to be a good son, good daughter, so that the relationship is so sweet, it makes it easier for them to come to a position where they can sometimes contribute in a parental way to us. Like that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.